All right, let's do this.
All right, what's up, everybody? This is Joffer, Papa Pump Penizai, with my main man, John DeMatt Maz. How you doing, Maz?
What's going on, Joff?
Not too much. So today, we have the man, the myth, the legend, John Wayne Parr on the podcast. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm very well, and thank you for having me on the show.
Hey, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule for us, mate.
Yeah.
How's that? Did you believe I was Australian for a second?
Oh my god, I feel like I'm right next door.
Oh man.
He sounds like a puff.
I know. What? So, John, we just wanted to basically introduce you to our audience. We have a wide variety of individuals that are following us, from sports enthusiasts, combat sports enthusiasts, all the way to hormone optimization specialists. So, we really wanted to get a fresh start with you. John, can you tell us about yourself, how you came into Muay Thai, and where you are today? The most difficult question, I'm sure, but let's try to get an abbreviated version.
I started out as a little kid watching martial arts movies, and then I wanted to take it to the next level, so I pestered my parents until they took me to a martial arts school. I started off in Taekwondo. I did that from 11 years old to about 12 and a half, 13. And then I wanted to try and push myself a little bit further, went into kickboxing. And then from the first day, decided, yep, this is what I want to do in my life. And then just so happened the movie Kickboxer came out around the same time. And that sort of inspired me to want to go to Thailand and beat up the Thais, or try and fight the Thais anyway. And then, yeah, it all sort of panned out that way. I got the opportunity to get sponsored and move to Bangkok and end up living there for 4 years straight. And then ended up winning 2 world titles in Bangkok, and then come back to Australia, opened a gym, and then, yeah, since then I've gone on to have 118 fights, I've won 10 world titles across the world, and I'm just living the dream of punching and kicking people.
I mean, that's an awesome dream, and for some people, their worst nightmare. I saw you post on Facebook the other day that they're going to come out with a new kickboxer movie with George St. Pierre as one of the characters. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think I just hope that it does it justice and it inspires the next generation of young kickboxers when they come out and learn how to do kickboxing in Muay Thai, because we really need something, because UFC is just dominating. So we need something to get our aura back to show that we are the legitimate strikers.
Now, you know, you brought up a really good point. You know, we are really MMA dominant right now in our society. Now, with the inception of things like Glory, how do you feel that is going to impact basically the combat sports world? And if you think it's going to be a big part, do you see yourself being involved with the organization at all?
No, I'm a spectator. I'm a fan of Glory. I really enjoy watching their events. They put on such an amazing show. But I'm very happy in Australia at the moment. I've done my time traveling the world when I was younger. I'm quite content on staying here in Australia and fighting in Melbourne, and then also on my CMT events here in Queensland, in my hometown. And I'm making good money too. So if I fight overseas, I'm sort of making only one quarter of what I would be making if I went and fought overseas. So yeah, I'm better off staying here and not getting jet lag as well.
Yeah, because wherever you fly to, it's a long ways away.
Oh man, if I go to America or Europe, my eyes are rolling around the back of my head and trying to focus on the fight so hard, because by lunchtime you're falling asleep, and then it's just so difficult. But if I bring international guests to my country, then they have to suffer. So I have the upper hand then.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, what do you think about the, you were talking about UFC earlier, what do you think about the quality of the actual Muay Thai and striking in the sport? Joe Rogan was talking about that. He thinks jiu-jitsu overall is like a purple belt, so like an intermediate level. Do you think it's kind of the same thing for the stand-up?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that have very standout striking. Anthony Pettis, he's amazing. Who else? Benson Henderson, he's pretty cool. I like Junior Dos Santos as a heavyweight. His striking is really good. There's a few guys that are an exception, but majority, they rave about how amazing their hands are and how their striking is. But yeah, as a professional striker, it's like, really? You really think that's the best of the best? So, but I think wrestling is definitely a big part in UFC. If you're a good wrestler, you've definitely got a big advantage. So Yeah, but I enjoy what I do. I like UFC from a spectator point of view, but as a professional Muay Thai fighter, I like what I do for a living instead.
Now, you're saying currently you're still fighting. You were mentioning that you fight in Australia currently?
Yes, I've got a fight in 5 weeks on the 21st of June against a young gentleman called Toby Smith.
Now, being that, you know, you're a multiple-time world champion and you've done a lot in the sport, what is your motivation right now to keep going? What makes you, you know, what makes you willing to keep getting punched in the face?
I really enjoy it. I like the competition side. I like I've keeping busy. Laying down at night time and just having that little bit of fear in the back of my head, thinking how what I have to do for my next up and coming fight, how I'm going to beat the odds, and how that I'm fighting now that I'm older too. I'm fighting the younger generation, so I'm fighting against the guys that are a lot more youthful than myself, and every fight's a challenge too. So as you might fight a guy with good knees, next fight might be a good guy with hands. So it never ends. It's just that constant thing. And fighting in front of big crowds, just is, you can't beat that rush. No matter what you do, going to the local store or whatever, you don't have 1,000 to 5,000 people cheering your name. So, yeah, to bottle that up, that's the motivation. It's fighting in front of the big crowds and getting that big roar.
It's a little bit like being like a local celebrity too, right?
Every fight sort of adds to the legacy as well. So I want to make sure that when I leave the sport get remembered. I don't want to just come and go and no one remember what I did. I want to leave my mark. Say when I retire, sort of like decades. I want people to remember me after I'm here and gone.
Now, John, you were saying, you know, especially you're fighting now. You started a lot when you were a lot younger. How has training evolved now that you're getting older? What are some modifications you make? What is an average day of training for John Wayne Parr?
Average day, I wake up at about 5. I'm on the road by 6:30. I run for about 12 kilometers in the morning. I come back, I do 3 rounds on the pads after shadow. I do my sit-ups and push-ups, so approximately 1.5 to 2 hours in the morning. During the day, I go home and rest, have some lunch, hang out with my family. And then afternoon, I'm back in the gym at 4. I run for another 7Ks. And then as it gets closer to the fight, I'm doing approximately 9 rounds on the pads, clinching, bag work, light sparring. That goes for 2.5 hours in the afternoon. So I've pretty much taken what I've learned in Thailand and brought it back to Australia. And I'm keeping the same routine, so nothing changes. It's just I'm just doing it with my friends instead of with the Thais.
Now, are these rounds 5-minute rounds, or just so people can know?
Only threes.
Oh, so you sold out. 9-3.
Hey, and then, we have 30-second breaks too. So on the ring, we have 2-minute breaks as a professional. So the rest for 30, and then have 2-minute break on the ring. It's like it's almost a holiday.
Now, John, out of all your fights, being that you know you've been out there for a long time, what if you had to pick one was your toughest fight throughout your career so far?
Yotsingle, probably the final of the contender. It was such an important fight, and there was $150,000 on the line plus worldwide recognition. And then, Yotsingle's a beast. He was so amped up and so ready. I don't think Mike Tyson could have beat him that day. He was so prepared for it. And my dad was really sick at the time too. He'd been diagnosed with cancer, so I really wanted to not only win for the fact of 150,000, but I really wanted to win for my dad, because it was the last fight he was going to see me fighting. So I went out there, and Götzenglai dropped me in the first round, and all I could think of the whole time was, "Oh man, I've got to get up. I've got to knock this guy out." And then he dropped me again in the second round. It's like, damn it, this is not supposed to happen. And then I just kept telling myself, "I've got to get up." And then from the rest of the fight, I just ran at Götzenglai, trying to do the best that I could to try and stop him. And we ended up going the distance, and he beat me on points. So I was very, very disappointed that I didn't get the win. But my dad was proud of me. He said, "Oh mate, I can't believe he kept getting up. That's inspiring. I got his pat on the back as approval before he passed away. So that meant more to me than actually winning."
Now, that show, I know there was a lot of drama on the show, especially with you and another fighter named, I believe his name was Rafiq. Was that, how much of that was true, or how much of that was just kind of embellished?
Oh no, Rafik was a special character in his own right. he was from the outset, from the very first moment we all met, he was just he wanted to make his mark. It was almost as if he looked down upon us because we were a lesser species, because we weren't French. He just really believed he was on this different level than all of us. Even Yotsingalai, he believed that he was better than Yotsingalai, and he really thought he was just going to dominate the show. And he was all talk. He kept saying the whole time, the only reason I'm on this show is to get my rematch with Yotsingalai. I want to smash him, I want to smash him, I want to do this, I want to do that. And then as soon as his turn to step up, he went to pieces. He literally just went white as soon as it was his turn to fight. So, he gave me a tough fight when we did fight in the show. I was a little bit angry and tried too hard to knock him out instead of playing the game. So he did earn my respect in that way, but at the same time, he's just a goose. He's one of those blokes you don't mind punching in the face. I'd love to do it again.
Now, you mentioned he got white in the face, and that's a huge part of this game, is dealing with the nerves and trying to conquer them. After all of these years of fighting, do you still get nervous before a fight? And if so, how do you deal with it?
I don't get as nervous as I used to, depending on the opponent also. If I'm fighting Yotsingalai or someone world famous like Zambides or Borkow, that makes you a little bit on edge because you know how important the fight is. But I've learned to channel my emotions from a negative to a positive. So every time the gremlins start setting in and start trying to make me fearful, I just turn it off because I know once the bell rings, it's never going to happen the way that I think it's going to. So there's no point wasting energy when it's not necessary.
Now, John, I have a question for you. I know recently you became a father, and now you've had all these professional fights, and you have another big fight coming up. Is there any plan for you to kind of maybe become a coach or just kind of do that full time instead of having to take your family through the training camps and all the ups and downs of being in, fighting and getting punished all the time?
I've been running my own gym since I was 1999. So the last 15 years haven't had the gym. So I've been coaching every day since then. The gym is okay. It doesn't make a lot of money. It's a lot of hard work for not much reward. Whereas my fighting, I'm probably one of the highest paid fighters in Australia in Muay Thai. So if I want to live the lifestyle that I live and live comfortably and buy toys and take care of my family, then it's really important that I stay healthy, stay injury free, and keep competing.
Now, I saw online that you and George St. Pierre are friends. How did you guys meet and where did this friendship cultivate? And when are you guys going to move into an apartment together?
I got the opportunity to go to Canada January last year. And then, the opportunity came to do some seminars. And I did the seminars and everything was going really well. And then I had a few days left before I was coming back to Australia. And then the owner of the gym said, hey, would you like to go to TriStar and meet George? I said, oh, my God, how cool would this be? After watching him for so many years, that'd be amazing. So they rang TriStar. Mr. Ferrez answered the phone. He said, yeah, we'd love to have John Wayne over here. In fact, we're having Muay Thai sparring day on Tuesday. If you guys come, we'll put John Wayne up for the night. And then if he can do some rounds, that'd be great. So, the opportunity came, went to the gym, took my shin pads and gloves. I padded up. I got to do a round with George, which was just amazing. And then I was so in awe, and I really thought I was going to have a hard time. But once the round started, funny enough, I sort of dominated the stand-up. I was very, very lucky to land a lot of punches and kicks and defend and not get hit. And George was like, wow, I can't believe that you just handed my ass to me. And then so we got some photos, and then I went back to Australia, and then a few months later, I get a phone call saying, hey, would you like to come back to TriStar and train George personally for 2 weeks? You don't have to do any classes or seminars or anything. All you have to do is personally train George. I was like, oh, man, how cool would this be? So, jumped back on the plane, and then, me and George were side by side for 2 weeks, and he's the coolest guy you could ever meet. Not only is he just just a superstar, but just a dude. He's just like the nicest guy that you could ever meet. Out of all these years of mixing with famous fighters and everything, he's definitely the most famous person I've ever met. Walking down the street with him, he cannot go 100 feet without being stopped 10, 15, 30 times. It's ridiculous. But he just takes all in his stride. He doesn't say no to anyone. Every single person, he takes a photo or a signature or just a shake hands. He's just, he's everything that you want to be if you had a company to be your champion.
Nice. So now, John, I know you fought all over the world. If you were to choose one place that you fought at that you've just loved, one country that you've loved besides Australia, where would it be?
Japan. Back when I was fighting for K1, we had a live audience of 40,000 people, and then we had a TV audience of 20 million just in Japan alone.
Wow.
So it was insane. I've never been treated like a superstar as much as I had when I was fighting for K1. It was just a different level of awesomeness. It was so cool. Like, people would stay in the hotel for literally 7 days the whole time we were there, just to get photos with us and bring us presents and people. I'd meet guys like other males, and that literally start crying. They're just shaking your hand. It's like, oh my god, come on, mate, harden up, buddy. So it was weird. It was cool, but it was weird.
Was that your favorite audience to fight in front of? Because everybody always talks about, like, during the Pride days, how the audiences are super respectful, dead quiet, and when something amazing happens, they erupt.
It's very sort of intimidating. My second fight for K1, I fought Borkow. And then we're standing toe-to-toe trading, and I'm trying to do the best that I can to knock him out, and there's just no feedback from the crowd. There's just silence. And there's 40,000 people in a room, yet you can't hear it. You could hear a pin drop. It's like almost eerie, but at the same time, it's unbelievable because you're walking out in front of that 40,000.
Did you get to see some sights or do anything cool when you were in Tokyo besides fight, or did you just kind of just focus on that while you were there?
After the fight, you'd have 1 or 2 days to look around, and Tokyo sort of became the second home for a little while. I had the opportunity to fight in Japan 16 times. So, yeah, every time was something special. I really enjoyed that country. Everyone's so polite and the food is so good. So I'd love to go back.
Now, John, I've seen several photos go around of you wearing MMA gloves and et cetera, et cetera. I actually don't know if they were, like, are you currently fighting MMA? Because that's one thing I was always confused about. I know I've seen a lot of Thai boxers have photos of themselves in MMA gloves. And I saw a poster with you on it. I was like, I didn't know John Wayne Parr fought MMA. So I wanted to actually ask you about that.
Okay, no, that's my new promotion. I have, it's called CMT, which pretty much stands for Cage Muay Thai. So I bought a 24-foot cage, had it imported over from America. And then I do Muay Thai in a cage with MMA gloves on. So there's no ground. It's just toe-to-toe Muay Thai with the elbows and knees and everything. And as soon as the fight goes to the ground, you stop, you stand back up, and you start training again. So it's everything you want to see in MMA besides the stalling. And there's also 8 counts. So if you get dropped, there's also an opportunity to come back and still win the fight without having to get called off straight away. It's very exciting, yet very painful.
It sounds awesome. I mean, in your opinion, wearing the small MMA gloves, how much easier do you feel it is for you to score a knockout on somebody?
It's hard. It's if you're fighting a high caliber fighter and they know how to defend and they have footwork and it's quite difficult. Especially if they have that will to win as well. I was the first show that I did. I've done 4 shows so far. So the first show I did, there was a knockout, and then the next one went the distance, and then out of 10 fights, I think 7 went the distance. And then the second show, same again. Third show, same again. So it's I thought it was just going to be all first round KOs, but once you get to that certain sort of standard, it's quite difficult. It does change the game though. My punching style has changed, my defense has changed, and my footwork's changed ever since I started fighting in the little gloves. Just because you don't want to be in the pocket anymore. You can't take one to give one. You have to make sure that you're in and out, and your defense is a lot more tighter because those little gloves just seem to find the holes very easy.
Now, if somebody wants to watch these fights, let's say in America, is there a website? Is there how can they view this?
I have a YouTube channel, Cage Muay Thai, or just go to John Wayne Parr and then type in CMT, and then you might get the country music channel as well. But
you're a huge fan of that, I heard.
Yeah, big fan. but just YouTube, John Wayne, and there should be some fights there in the cage.
Now, are you guys having the same problem with those gloves that they are in mixed martial arts with the eye poking?
A little bit, not as bad. Maybe 10 fights, might get one fight in 10 that might have a little accident, but yeah, it's rough. Now, but at the same time, I don't want to wear normal boxing gloves in the cage. It doesn't do it justice.
No, if you guys...
After watching Muay Thai UFC for so long, you take big gloves into the cage and it just looks wrong. So the main reason I wanted to do it, because I'm such a fan of the UFC and I really want to... I think that their fighting arena is so much more hardcore than a boxing ring. So I wanted that opportunity to fight in the same and have the same experience. So that's why I made everything as close as I could to what they do, besides the ground part, because, yeah, I'm too old to learn the jiu-jitsu and the wrestling. And I just want to do what I do.
Now that you know, you're basically fighting MMA without the groundwork, have you been approached by other MMA fighters to help them out with their camps besides George St. Pierre, or was that kind of the one-and-done kind of situation?
I was lucky enough to work with Brandon Vera when he was here in Australia. Also, Ross Pearson. So we did a couple of hours together. They're really cool guys. There's a chance I might be heading over to America and San Diego later in the year in July. Hopefully I get to work with a lot of good people over there as well. So, the opportunities are definitely starting to pop up. It's hard too because I'm still fighting, so I haven't really dedicated myself to training other people as such. I really want to keep pushing myself into what I want to do with my career, and then once I'm finished, then I definitely want to explore that a lot more harder and try and get a lot more work. But at this stage, I still want to keep punching people in the face.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego would be an awesome place for you. That's like the hotbed of mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu right now in America, plus a lot of hot chicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I used to live in San Diego for 6 months back in 2002, back in downtown. So, it was fun, but I was poor.
That's when downtown was dangerous and there was bums and homeless people everywhere.
Oh, it's changed?
Oh, it's real nice now.
Ha!
And you know what? Your favorite restaurant, of course, will be there. Outback Steakhouse.
Hey, yes.
For those of you who don't know, Outback Steakhouse is everywhere in Australia. John Wayne Parr told us that previously.
Koalas and kangaroos.
Yes. Now, after this fight, are you going to be doing a streak of seminars? Or is it basically right now just focus on the gym, the new baby, your wife, and your fight career?
Yeah, I have. I fight June 21, and then July 15th, I'm off to Mexico, to Monterey, to teach a seminar in Monterey. I'm planning to head over to San Diego, do some seminars there, and then I get back early August, and then I'm off to Hong Kong to teach a seminar in Hong Kong also. So, and then I have another fight October, and back in the cage December 6th. So my year's, very busy. It's been really cool.
That's awesome. Now, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? Do you see yourself continuously fighting, or are there bigger plans for the future?
I'm almost 38, so I know my time's running short as a professional fighter.
Yeah, you're old as dirt.
Yeah.
not as old as Randy Couture, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. And then Bernard Hopkins, he's 49. He just won another world title.
He's amazing.
If guys like this can do it, there's no reason I can't.
No, absolutely.
So 38, I'll give myself another 12 months. I'll see where I'm at. If I'm still winning, I'll keep going. If I'm getting beat up by younger kids, I'll look at hanging them up. And then in 5 years' time, who knows? Hopefully the gym's successful and I have a lot of guys fighting underneath me. And I'd like to keep traveling if possible. I really enjoy seeing other countries and taking my fighters on different adventures. And hopefully they can live the lifestyle I have.
Yeah, well, whenever you come to New Jersey, just let us know.
Hey, beautiful.
Let us know. I'll take you to an Outback Steakhouse. And
I'll rub and tug.
Yeah, and I'll introduce you to some of the most beautiful women you'll probably never see.
Hey, beautiful.
Now, we don't want to take up too much of your time because we know you got a lot going on. So, just, we have two more segments before we get into our last one. Any shout-outs, sponsors, anything like that you want to go into?
Yeah, just like the thing, my main sponsor is Boonchoo Restaurant. They look after me since I was 16 years old. They're the ones that sent me to Thailand when I was a 19-year-old with the hopes and dreams of one day being a real fighter. And then because of them, I ended up, yeah, they supported me for 4 years living there. And then, yeah, things happened, so it's been really cool. And that's out of them, that's how I named my gym, Boonchoo Gym, just to say thank you for everything they did for me. Yeah, and then I've got another sponsor called Quest. They help, to purchase my gym. So I'm not only renting now, but I actually bought it. So, yeah, times are good.
All right, so our last segment, my friend, is our random question segment where we both ask one question, completely random, comes off the top of our head. We do not give it any thought. So,
yeah.
All right, are you ready?
No, you go.
Okay, I'll go first. All right. If you had to let's pretend you were single. If you had to spend one night with a woman, if it was either Gina Carano or Julie Kitchen, who would you spend the night with?
Oh, shit. At my age?
Yes, at your age.
I'd probably click on the U-porn and just do it myself.
All right.
Then I don't have to talk to him after.
No, good point. Good point.
And it's free.
Yeah, and you don't have to spend money on Outback Steakhouse beforehand.
Oh, let's see if I have a question. Do you know who the top 100 or the number one song for the Triple J was this year?
No idea.
Fucking A. I don't know either.
Well, John, we wanted to thank you so much. We know your schedule's busy. We've been trying to make this happen for a while, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule for us.
Hey, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun.
All right, and we look forward to having you on after your next fight or the falling fight.
Beautiful. We'll stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care, brother.
Yeah.